Chapter 30. Took a turn this year into the cloisters, and among the rest I fell into one of the raffling shops. It was a thing of no great consequence to me, nor did I expect to make much of it. But there came a gentleman extremely well-dressed and very rich, and as 'tis frequent to talk to everybody in those shops, he singled me out, and was very particular with me. First he told me he would put in for me to raffle, and did so, and some small matter coming to his lot, he presented it to me, I think it was a feather muff. Then he continued to keep talking to me with a more than common appearance of respect, but still very civil, and much like a gentleman. He held me in talk so long, till at last he drew me out of the raffling place to the shop door, and then to a walk in the cloister, still talking of a thousand things cursorily without anything to the purpose. At last he told me that, without compliment, he was charmed with my company, and asked me, if I durst trust myself in a coach with him. He told me he was a man of honor, and would not offer anything to me unbecoming him as such. I seemed to decline it a while, but suffered myself to be importuned a little, and then yielded. I was at a loss in my thoughts, to conclude at first what this gentleman designed. But I found afterwards he had had some drink in his head, and that he was not very unwilling to have some more. He carried me in the coach to the spring garden, at Knightsbridge, where we walked in the gardens, and he treated me very handsomely. But I found he drank very freely. He pressed me also to drink, but I declined it. Hitherto he kept his word with me, and offered me nothing amiss. We came away in the coach again, and he brought me into the streets, and by this time it was near 10 o'clock at night, and he stopped the coach at a house where, it seems, he was acquainted, and where they made no scruple to show us upstairs into a room with a bed in it. At first I seemed to be unwilling to go up, but after a few words I yielded to that too, being willing to see the end of it, and in hope to make something of it at last. As for the bed, etc., I was not much concerned about that part. Here he began to be a little freer with me than he had promised, and I by little and little yielded to everything, so that, in a word, he did what he pleased with me. I need say no more. All this while he drank freely too, and about 1 in the morning we went into the coach again. The air and the shaking of the coach made the drink he had get more up in his head than it was before, and he grew uneasy in the coach, and was for acting over again what he had been doing before. But as I thought my game now secure, I resisted him, and brought him to be a little still, which had not lasted 5 minutes, but he fell fast asleep. I took this opportunity to search him to a nicety. I took a gold watch, with a silk purse of gold, his fine full-bottom periwig and silver-fringed gloves, his sword and fine snuff-box, and gently opening the coach door, stood ready to jump out while the coach was going on. But the coach stopped in the narrow street beyond Temple Bar, to let another coach pass. I got softly out, fastened the door again, and gave my gentleman and the coach the slip both together, and never heard more of them. This was an adventure indeed unlooked for, and perfectly undesigned by me, though I was not so past the merry part of life, as to forget how to behave, when a fop so blinded by his appetite, should not know an old woman from a young. I did not indeed look so old as I was by 10 or 12 years, yet I was not a young wench of 17, and it was easy enough to be distinguished. There is nothing so absurd, so surfeiting, so ridiculous, as a man heated by wine in his head, and wicked gust in his inclination together. He is in the possession of two devils at once, and can no more govern himself by his reason than a mill can grind without water. His vice tramples upon all that was in him that had any good in it, if any such thing there was. Nay, his very senses blinded by its own rage, and he acts absurdities even in his views, such a drinking more, when he is drunk already, picking up a common woman, without regard to what she is, or who she is, whether sound or rotten, clean or unclean, whether ugly or handsome, whether old or young, and so blinded as not really to distinguish. Such a man is worse than a lunatic, prompted by his vicious, corrupted head. He no more knows what he is doing than this wretch of mine knew when I picked his pocket of his watch and his purse of gold. These are the men of whom Solomon says, they go like an ox to the slaughter, till a dart strikes through their liver. An admirable description, by the way, of the foul disease, which is a poisonous deadly contagion mingling with the blood, whose center or foundation is in the liver, from whence, by the swift circulation of the whole mass, that dreadful nauseous plague strikes immediately through his liver, and his spirits are infected, his vitals stabbed through, as with a dart. It is true this poor unguarded wretch was in no danger from me, though I was greatly apprehensive at first, of what danger I might be in from him. But he was really to be pitied in one respect, that he seemed to be a good sort of man in himself, a gentleman that had no harm in his design, a man of sense, and of a fine behavior, a comely handsome person, a sober solid countenance, a charming beautiful face, and everything that could be agreeable. Only had unhappily had some drink the night before, had not been in bed, as he told me when we were together, was hot, and his blood fired with wine, and in that condition his reason, as it were asleep, had given him up. As for me, my business was his money, and what I could make of him. And after that, if I could have found out any way to have done it, I would have sent him safe home to his house, and to his family, for it was 10 to 1, but he had an honest, virtuous wife and innocent children, that were anxious for his safety, and would have been glad to have gotten him home, and have taken care of him till he was restored to himself. And then with what shame and regret would he look back upon himself? How would he reproach himself with associating himself with a whore? Picked up in the worst of all holes, the cloister, among the dirt and filth of all the town, how would he be trembling for fear he had got the pox, for fear a dart had struck through his liver, and hate himself every time he looked back upon the madness and brutality of his debauch? How would he, if he had any principles of honor, as I verily believe he had, I say, how would he abhor the thought of giving any ill distemper, if he had it, as for aught he knew he might, to his modest and virtuous wife, and thereby sowing the contagion in the lifeblood of his posterity? Would such gentlemen, but consider the contemptible thoughts which the very women they are concerned with, in such cases as these, have of them, it would be a surfeit to them. As I said above, they value not the pleasure, they are raised by no inclination to the man. The passive jade thinks of no pleasure but the money, and when he is, as it were, drunk in the ecstasies of his wicked pleasure, her hands are in his pockets searching for what she can find there, and of which he can no more be sensible in the moment of his folly than he can forethink of it when he goes about it. I knew a woman, that was so dexterous with a fellow, who indeed deserved no better usage, that while he was busy with her another way, conveyed his purse with 20 guineas, in and out of his fob pocket, where he had put it for fear of her, and put another purse with gilded counters, in and into the room of it. After he had done, he says to her, "Now an't you pick my pocket?" She jested with him, and told him she supposed he had not much to lose. He put his hand to his fob, and with his fingers felt that his purse was there, which fully satisfied him, and so she brought off his money. And this was a trade with her. She kept a sham gold watch, that is, a watch of silver gilt, and a purse of counters in her pocket to be ready on all such occasions, and I doubt not practiced it with success. I came home with this last booty to my governess, and really when I told her the story, it so affected her, that she was hardly able to forbear tears. To know how such a gentleman ran the daily risk of being undone every time a glass of wine got into his head. But as to the purchase I got, and how entirely I stripped him, she told me it pleased her wonderfully. "Nay, child," says she, "the usage may, for aught I know, do more to reform him than all the sermons that ever he will hear in his life." And if the remainder of the story be true, so it did. I found the next day she was wonderful inquisitive about this gentleman. the description I had given her of him, his dress, his person, his face, everything concurred to make her think of a gentleman whose character she knew, and family too. She mused a while, and I going still on with the particulars, she starts up, says she, I'll lay number 100 I know the gentleman. Apostrophe, I am sorry you do, apostrophe says I, for I would not have him exposed on any account in the world. He has had injury enough already by me, and I would not be instrumental to do him any more. Apostrophe no, no, apostrophe says she, I will do him no injury, I assure you, but you may let me satisfy my curiosity a little, for if it is he, I warrant you, I find it out. Apostrophe I was a little startled at that, and told her, with an apparent concern in my face, that by the same rule he might find me out, and then I was undone. She returned warmly, why, do you think I will betray you, child? No, no, apostrophe says she, not for all he is worth in the world. I have kept your counsel in worse things than these, sure you may trust me in this. Apostrophe so I said, no more at that time. She laid her scheme another way, and without acquainting me of it, but she was resolved to find it out if possible. So she goes to a certain friend of hers who was acquainted in the family, that she guessed at, and told her friend she had some extraordinary business with such a gentleman, who, by the way, was no less than a baronet, and of a very good family, and that she knew not how to come at him without somebody to introduce her. Her friend promised her very readily to do it, and accordingly goes to the house to see if the gentleman was in town. The next day she come to my governess, and tells her that sir was at home, but that he had met with a disaster, and was very ill, and there was no speaking with him. What disaster? Apostrophe apostrophe says my governess hastily, as if she was surprised at it. Why, apostrophe says her friend, he had been at Hampstead, to visit a gentleman of his acquaintance, and as he came back again he was set upon and robbed, and having got a little drink too, as they suppose, the rogues abused him, and he is very ill. Apostrophe robbed. Apostrophe apostrophe says my governess, and what did they take from him? Apostrophe apostrophe why, apostrophe says her friend, they took his gold watch and his gold snuff box, his fine periwig, and what money he had in his pocket, which was considerable, to be sure for sir never goes without a purse of guineas about him. Apostrophe, saw. Apostrophe apostrophe says my old governess, jeering, I warrant you, he has got drunk now, and got a whore, and she has picked his pocket, and so he comes home to his wife, and tells her he has been robbed. That's an old sham. A thousand such tricks are put upon the poor women every day. Apostrophe, fie. Apostrophe apostrophe says her friend, I find you don't know sir, why he is as civil a gentleman, there is not a finer man, nor a soberer, graver, modester person in the whole city, he abhors such things, there's nobody that knows him will think such a thing of him. Apostrophe well, well, apostrophe says my governess, that's none of my business. If it was, I warrant I should find there was something of that kind in it. Your modest men in common opinion are sometimes no better than other people, only they keep a better character, or, if you please, are the better hypocrites. Apostrophe, no, no, apostrophe says her friend, I can assure you sir is no hypocrite, he is really an honest, sober gentleman, and he has certainly been robbed. Apostrophe nay, apostrophe says my governess, it may be he has, it is no business of mine, I tell you, I only want to speak with him, my business is of another nature. Apostrophe, but, apostrophe says her friend, let your business be of what nature it will, you cannot see him yet, for he is not fit to be seen, for he is very ill, and bruised very much, apostrophe a, says my governess, nay, then he has fallen into bad hands, to be sure, apostrophe and then she asked gravely, pray, where is he bruised? Apostrophe apostrophe why, in the head, apostrophe says her friend, and one of his hands, and his face, for they used him barbarously. Apostrophe poor gentleman, apostrophe says my governess, I must wait then, till he recovers, and that, I hope it will not be long, for I want very much to speak with him. Apostrophe, away she comes to me, and tells me this story. I have found out your fine gentleman, and a fine gentleman he was, apostrophe says she, but, mercy on him, he is in a sad pickle now. I wonder what the DL you have done to him. Why, you have almost killed him. Apostrophe I looked at her with disorder enough. I killed him. Apostrophe apostrophe says I, you must mistake the person. I am sure I did nothing to him. He was very well when I left him. Apostrophe said I, only drunk and fast asleep. Apostrophe I know nothing of that. Apostrophe says she, but he is in a sad pickle now. And so she told me all that her friend had said to her. Well then, apostrophe says I, he fell into bad hands, after I left him, for I am sure I left him safe enough. Apostrophe, about 10 days after, or a little more, my governess goes again to her friend, to introduce her to this gentleman. She had inquired other ways in the meantime, and found that he was about again, if not abroad again, so she got leave to speak with him. She was a woman of a admirable address, and wanted nobody to introduce her. She told her tale much better than I shall be able to tell it for her, for she was a mistress of her tongue, as I have said already. She told him that she came, though a stranger, with a single design of doing him a service, and he should find she had no other end in it, that as she came purely on so friendly an account, she begged promise from him, that if he did not accept what she should officiously propose he would not take it ill, that she meddled with what was not her business. She assured him that as what she had to say, was a secret, that belonged to him only, so whether he accepted her offer or not, it should remain a secret to all the world, unless he exposed it himself. Nor should his refusing her service in it make her, so little show her respect, as to do him the least injury, so that he should be entirely at liberty, to act as he thought fit. He looked very shy at first, and said he knew nothing that related to him that required much secrecy, that he had never done any man any wrong, and cared not what anybody might say of him, that it was no part of his character, to be unjust to anybody, nor could he imagine in what any man could render him any service, but that if it was so disinterested a service as she said, he could not take it ill from any one, that they should endeavor to serve him. And so, as it were, left her a liberty either to tell him, or not to tell, as she thought fit. She found him so perfectly indifferent, that she was almost afraid to enter into the point with him. But, however, after some other circumlocutions she told him that by a strange and unaccountable accident she came to have a particular knowledge of the late unhappy adventure he had fallen into, and that in such a manner, that there was nobody in the world but herself and him that were acquainted with it, no, not the very person, that was with him. He looked a little angrily at first. What adventure? Apostrophe said he. Why, apostrophe said she, of your being robbed coming from Knightbr Hampstead, sir, I should say, apostrophe says she. Be not surprised, sir, apostrophe says she, that I am able to tell you every step you took that day from the cloister in Smithfield to the spring garden at Knightsbridge, and thence to the inn the Strand, and how you were left asleep in the coach afterwards. I say, let not this surprise you, for, sir, I do not come to make a booty of you, I ask nothing of you, and I assure you the woman that... Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.